It is definitely good to see each and every one of you. Glad that you're here and able to be here. Glad we got those that are visiting with us. And you're definitely our honored guest, and hope that you can come and be with us any and every time that you have the opportunity. We are continuing in our study on, walking on our own two feet. We have covered all the way through knowledge, and I got Brother Terrence to take and go ahead and read that passage again to us. And I've been including that verse 4 in there for a reason. The ideal of, escaping, really the filth of the flesh and, that corruption, and then once we've obeyed the gospel, that's that first initial release from sin. We put that behind us, and now we're determined to serve God properly. And then we're told, these things to add unto ourselves. I've made mention as we've gone through these that they're not a one-time thing. It's not like, okay, I can add this, I'm good to go, move on with the rest of my life. No, it's a constant thing. It's a constant monitoring of oneself. You got to love when your tongue just wraps all the way around your teeth, right? Monitoring of oneself, and then constant adding, these things unto yourself to make yourself better. The good thing is, just from what I know of the scriptures, the Lord, he will judge us on what we do, but he doesn't judge us on what we maybe should have already accomplished or if we're just not capable of getting to somebody else's level. He really is going to judge us on our attitude about growth and the effort that we put into it. So that, the ideal of adding these things, it's a process. And the Lord's going to judge us on whether we're trying or not. We need to understand that. If we're not trying, we're not trying to do better. We're not trying to grow. We're not trying to be closer unto Him, being more Christ-like. Then we're going to be judged very harshly for that. But if we are, I think the Lord is pleased with us. So we just need to make sure that, our everyday life is adding. We just need to make sure we're adding. So the one on the list after knowledge we had last week is temperance. Now, another word for temperance, and then you might actually even have this wrote in one of your other versions, like the English Standard, as self-control, temperance or self-control. A regular Webster's dictionary definition I like to put up, put it in our terms today, moderation in action, moderation in thought, feeling, and I actually highlighted this one in red, restraint. The second one, and there's two parts of this, habitual moderation. Now, this is like a physical, definition of this, more of a temporal, earthly definition. It says habitual moderation in the indulgence of the appetites or passions. And then the second part of that and is really the moderation or abstinence from the use of alcoholic beverages. And if you take and just, go to type in like temperance to see, what you can get even for like a dictionary definition. And I'm going to mention this again here in a few minutes. The bottom one is the one that almost constantly pops up with that use of that word. It's sort of odd that it's solely on alcoholic beverages, which is odd. Continuing to get a little better understanding of the word that's used here, I'm not even going to try to pronounce that in the Greek, nowhere close. But in Strong's, the Greek, it's 1466, that word on the screen. It means self-mastery, self-restraint, self-control. Now, here's what I found really interesting is that it's actually from two other words that they've placed together. It's from 1722, and it's more like EN, and that means in the sphere of or the realm of. Is what that means. And then 2904, again, I'm not even going to really try, dominion or mastery. So if you're a Greek scholar in that, what you come up with, really what it's meaning, the word like for temperance or self-control, and I really like this definition, it's mastery from within. Mastery from within. So the ideal of adding temperance, it means that we're working on ourselves. We're really sort of battling ourselves. We're trying to control ourselves from within. And I really like that, when it comes to the ideal of understanding what temperance or self-control is. It is seeking mastery from within. And I think that's the best way we can look at it. You know, when it comes down to adding this unto it, it's a self-reflecting thing. You've got to look at yourself, within yourself, deep down, and say, what do I need to work on? And let me give it all I've got to work on. And that's temperance, adding unto ourselves temperance. Mastery from within. So you can't point at somebody else and say, oh, they need to work on that. Or you need to point at somebody and say, they need this or they need that. What you've got to do is look at yourself, point at yourself and say, you got to work on that. And that's the temperance, adding temperance, mastery from within. And I really like that. And I'll be the first one to tell you, I've got my own finger pointing to do. So don't take that I'm up here pointing at others or any other, you know, problem that anybody else has got. And I've just brought a few different things we need temperance in on. But you got to look at yourself and say, what do I need to work at and fix it? Get started on that. And that's adding that temperance. Like I said, when you go to look it up, and here's a temperance pledge. You know, and this is one of the first things that pop up when you start looking, you know, about things with temperance. Again, it goes to alcohol. You know, so, you know, I agree, you know, the ideal of, you know, having self-control over that. But, you know, they use the passage here at the bottom. Wine is a mocker, strong drink is raging. Whosoever is deceived thereby is not wise. And they, you know, they use a good scripture for that. But the thing is, when we talk about the ideal of, with, you know, having control over oneself, maybe to keep yourself from drinking too much, if we go back to the lesson I had on alcohol, we would understand that the Christian wouldn't have anything to do with it anyhow. All right, but I mean, I can understand why the world as a whole has to fight that battle, because, you know, alcoholism is a major problem in the world. You know, people, they drink, and they drink too much. You know, so I mean, I can understand why they want to take that word and really just apply it to that. But this is the, like, number one thing that kept coming up over and over and over. When you use the word temperance today, it goes to alcohol. You know, and like I said, I can understand that. As Christians, hopefully we don't have that battle. You know, we might. I know some in the past that have, you know, in my years of preaching and teaching, and individuals that fight that battle, that have had to leave the drink behind, and it's a constant battle. And it's probably a very tough battle, because it's on every commercial that you would see. It's talking about on the radio. You drive down the road, it's on the billboards. I mean, it's always in front of you. You know, you can't go into a gas station without seeing ads all over all the windows. So, I mean, I could understand a Christian that's left it behind having to fight that battle the rest of their life. But, I mean, that would be really any sin that you would have to fight. It's going to be a lifelong battle. You've got your thing to deal with, and you're going to have to battle it, and battle it hard. That's just part of, you know, being faithful and then staying a child of God. You're going to have to fight that fight. Now, the next one might be in my category, and it's a good time for this lesson, because I think I'm as low as I've been in about 10 years. You know, I can throw that out. Deanna's got us all on a diet, and I'm about lower than I've been in about 10 years, but it's food. And when they think of food, I have to think of poor old Garfield. Anybody that's ever read the Garfield comics, oh, that poor cat, he can eat, you know. And, you know, that vet, you know, John, his owner's sweet on the vet. And Garfield hates the vet, because every time he goes to the vet, the only thing she really tells him is he's fat. You know, and she even got, like, the little scale that talks to him. And the scale is like, oh, you know, you're so fat, you know. And I can feel for poor Garfield, right? Some of us are in the similar state, you know. But food, you know, it's like that pile of tater chips. What do they say about chips? You can't just eat just one. You know, and it's that self-control, you know, when we start thinking of sins, there are sins we got to stay away from. But, you know, gluttony is a sin, you know, so, you know, overindulgence, just stuff, you know, our face. Proverbs 23 and 21, I've got it on the screen. It says, "For the drunkard and the glutton shall come to poverty, and drowsiness shall clothe a man with rags." you know, you hear people talk about teenagers eat you out of house and home. Ain't that sort of what Proverbs 23, 21 is saying? A drunkard and a glutton shall come to poverty. I guess you could eat yourself out of house and home. But, you know, drowsiness is the ideal of a sluggard or a lazy person that's not going to get up and work and earn anything. In either case, it's the ideal of you not having control, having mastery over oneself, whether it's to drink, to eat, or just lazy about and do nothing with life. it's all going to come to physical ruin. But we also need to understand, you know, we start talking about drunkenness, gluttony, and laziness, slothfulness. Those are all sins too. You know, so you're coming to spiritual ruin as well. So when we start talking temperature, self-control, food, you know, what we ingest. I've tried to lighten up the mood with some of these, you know, because I know we all fight these, and most of us fight more than one of these. But anger is another one, you know. I know some that anger's a constant battle. You know, it's easy to just fly off the handle. You know, Ephesians 4 and verse 31, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. When I read that verse, I like to think that if the individual would think about the anger that they're gaining against a person or a thing or something else, if they would turn that anger against themselves and say, you know, I need to remove this. You know, that's the ideal, you know, of putting it away with all malice. It's like turning that back on yourself, that consuming fire, like this little fella that's out of a cartoon. If you turn that consuming fire back on that, let me fight my desire, my urge to lose control and be angry and have wrath. Let me just turn that back on myself, fix that problem. That's sort of what that passage is saying, you know, get rid of it with everything, fight that. You know, we all know that the anger and the wrath to the point of striking out or lashing out with the tongue, it's hurtful. It's hurtful to you, it's hurtful to others, and it's sinful. You know, so you got to remove those things, you know, and that's one of those things you just got to fight. You know, sometimes we're just ingrained to lash out. You know, we just got to fight that. We just got to fight, you know, the urge to lose control. So we got to be temperate. Another one I got is lust. Lusting after the other flesh, the other sex, you know, that kind of thing. 1 Corinthians 7 and 9, but if they cannot exercise self-control, they should marry. For it is better to marry than to burn with passion. So, you know, Paul talking about how bad it was at this time, the persecution, and, you know, he even talks about it's probably better not to marry because they would pit like your spouse against you. They would do terrible, awful things to your spouse, hoping that you would blaspheme and reject God, you know, and then they would end up killing you both anyhow. You know, so Paul's talking about, you know, maybe it's not, you know, best to do that, but if you're not able to control yourself, then definitely, you know, come together, husband and wife, to control those things. And our whole society, you know, the ideal of having lustful thoughts, it's just pushed. It's pushed in everything. Every kind of commercial, billboard ad. We went to Walmart yesterday to get a food processor. A lot of Deanna's recipes she's needing to make, she's needing to like grind the stuff up and make it herself. And I tell you what, just walking lust ads all through Walmart. It was just awful. You know, and I've actually got another slide for that. But, you know, people, they're promoting their self. It's advertisement. Look at me, look at me, look at me. And why not? I mean, that's what everything that is being pushed on people. You know, I mean, it is. And it's terrible. But, you know, that lust, the lust for the other sex, you know, God give us that for a reason, to take and come together to create families and to raise our families unto Him. But it, you know, like every other good thing that God has given us, mankind destroys. And this is one of those things that's in an internal thing. You know, internally, you got to fight this because it leads to external sins as well as internal sins. You just got to fight it. You got to just continue to fight yourself. I think it was Isaiah, he mentioned, you know, the idea that he made a covenant with his own eyes, you know, to not look. And that's what you got to do. You just got to tell yourself, hey, it's wrong. Steer away from it. Look the other way. Turn that thing off. Go to another channel. Flip over the next page of a magazine. Quit looking up at a billboard. Whatever the case is, you just got to do that with yourself. And it's a battle you're going to have to fight. Fun. I know you're thinking, oh, don't bring in fun. But when we start thinking self-control, and we talk about all that entailed, that mastery, we can let anything get to the point that it controls us, whatever it is. And a lot of times, our hobbies or other things can fully control us. You know, I've got stuff like fishing and hunting. I love those things. You know, I like to play some sports, golf, and different things, you know, over the years. I've played a little bit of every sport that you see up there, you know. And I like video games. I like to play those. But, you know, when it comes to control, You know, when it comes to what comes first in your life, what's most important in your life, you can't let those things control you. You can't let, you know, those things overwhelm your other responsibilities in life. You just can't. You know, they got to find their place. They got to find their place, you know, behind, you know, family, behind others, behind God, you know, behind your service. They all have to find their place. And I get very aggravated with this because, you know, I teach math online, and I've got a lot of students that they've struggled, they have failed, you know, they just don't do well. The parents, you know, they get signed up to take it with me online because that's like their last option. And you're like, okay, I'll do everything to help. And I will. You know, any parent that's had me will tell you that I go out of my way to help. You know, whatever it takes. You know, hour worth of tutoring, whatever. And then, oh, they got football practice. Oh, they got soccer practice. Oh, they've got this. They go to this. They go to this. They go to that. And then I'm like, oh, when can I help? I don't know. I'm like, then just go ahead and plan on them failing one more time. Let's not waste my time. Just yank them out and just say, good deal, you got an F, you don't graduate, too bad. You know, but I get to thinking, you want them to graduate. You want them to do well. Why do you continually to take and push them to let these things control their life and make them fail? But they do. They don't find time for anything else but sports or even like hunting and fishing and video games. You hear these kids, you know, they're like, oh, I didn't have time for anything. You know, and then their mom's like, well, I know he was on that Xbox for 5 hours yesterday. You know, and I'm like, yeah, well, he had plenty of time to get that geometry done then, didn't he? Well, he needs to take and be withdrawn. And then he loses all of his work that he did do over 6 months, you know, instead of like 16 weeks, you know. But any of these things can control us when we let them. You know, we got to have mastery of ourselves. You know, yes, these things are fun, and in and of themselves, there's nothing wrong with them. But if we let them control us, we lose control of ourselves over these, then yeah, we need to do something about it. And that's internal. You got to fix that within yourself. You got to just say, okay, I like it, but I need to draw a line. Yeah. Modesty, I mentioned that. You know, if you go to Walmart, you're going to see that problem, which I think this time of year, if you go anywhere, you're going to have an issue with seeing this, let alone places where it's more prominent, like the beach or something. But 1 Timothy 2:9, likewise also that women should adorn themselves in respectable apparel with modesty and what? Self-control. Not with braided hair and gold or pearls or costly attire. You know, every year that I do a modesty lesson, I always bring this point up within it. Not only is it showing of one's skin as being immodest, but it's also the ideal of being gaudy, you know, showy, showing off, you know, extravagant in one's nature. It's anything that you're doing to purposely draw attention to yourself. And that's a lack of self-control. And it also puts it in being unmodest. We are not to be individuals that want to draw attention to ourselves. You know, we're not to be the one that's showing skin off in that immodest way, but also the ideal of just trying to show out. We're not to be those kind of people. It's immodest in the sense of the definition. And it shows that we need to do so with self-control. You know, some people have, you know, problem with that, the ideal of being proud, puffed up, and they want to demonstrate how well they look or how much they have or how much money they've spent on certain clothes or whatever. You got to find, you know, some form of boundary on that. So, you know, just some things I wanted to cover, just some different topics that I know that people really struggle with. But continuing with our study on temperance, we need to understand when it comes to having self-mastery that the Lord has given us the ability to do so. You know, some people say, I just can't help myself. No, you can help yourself. You just got to want to help yourself. I always think of my dad. Didn't think before I spoke. Father's Day. I was thinking of ability. Dad quit smoking. You know, a lot of people talk about they don't have the ability to quit smoking. You know, I told him that he would die just like Granddaddy if he didn't. Tossed him out, and he quit. He may have picked him up or had another one without me knowing, but he quit. And I think God gave him the ability. He was on meds, you know, and he was in a lot of pain, and they had him on meds, and he knew that he had no life. He couldn't function, couldn't do anything, and he just said, I'm done with them. And he threw them away, or just quit, cold turkey quit. And he had a miserable week or two after that dealing with getting over them, but he got over it. He did it on his own. So when you think, I can't do it, no, you can do it. God's given you the ability to do it. You just got to do it. 2 Timothy 1:7, for God gave us a spirit, not of fear, but of power and love and self-control. God gave us the ability to do a lot. But we've got to choose to do it. So the ideal of being able to have self-mastery, we can do it. You can do it. You just got to fight that fight and be determined to win that fight. A lack of this temperance, this self-control, this mastery is condemned. We need to understand that. If you will, turn with me to 2 Timothy 3. 2 Timothy 3, 1 through 9. 2 Timothy 3, 1 through 9. It says, but know this, that in the last days perilous times will come, for men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its power. And from such people turn away. For of this sort are those who creep into households and make captive of gullible women, loaded down with sins, led away by various lusts, always learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. Now as Jannes and Jambres resisted Moses, so do these also resist the truth. Men of corrupt minds disapprove concerning the faith, but they will progress no further, for their folly will be manifested to all, and theirs also was, as theirs also was. Verse 3 in particular, though, you take and you look at all the different things that are listed here. You know, people that are unholy, those that blaspheme God, those that are unloving, unforgiving, slanderers. Right there in the middle of this list, those without self-control, those without self-mastery. Notice even the next one out there, brutal, brutal people. When you think of murderers and rapists and those that throw their children away, I read just the other day where right at the side of a U.S. Forestry Department thing, they found a little plastic bag and they noticed that it was moving and it had a baby in it. Somebody had chunked their baby in a plastic bag and threw it out on the side of the road. You know, that falls right in the ideal of unloving and brutal, right? And notice what's in the midst of the same kind of people as those that would chunk their babies out on the side of the road, those without self-mastery. If that doesn't give you a reason to fight yourself internally and make sure that you can overcome, I don't know what won't, because they're condemned. And we would be condemned in the same. Romans 6 and verse 12. Let not sin therefore reign in your mortal body, that you should obey it in the lust thereof. You know, let not sin reign. That means we can have self-mastery and we can push it out. We can overcome. You just got to fight through that. Proverbs, 25 verse 28, you know, Proverbs a lot of times gives you a lot of imagery, and I tried to find a picture that fit this. A man, and this could be a woman, without self-control is like a city broken into and left without walls. You know, that's just like this nice fortified little structure you can see behind. You can see how big them walls are, how thick they were. And they've been broken into, destroyed, and that's what's left. An individual that does not have self-control is in the same state as once a true, strong, proud city that's been, you know, fought, won over, and left in ruin. You know, that's the kind of imagery there that's left. To think, you know, what kind of person am I? What do I need to do? You need to take and have self-mastery so you don't leave yourself in ruin. Yeah, it's not easy. It's not easy to have self-mastery. I'll be the first to tell you, no one has an easy job of it. Some people seem like they've got everything in their life in order. They don't. They don't. They are at war every single day to keep everything going as well as they do. You know, that's because they're willing to fight and they're going to win that fight. And that's why they seem like they got things in order. Yeah. And every person, like it says, has something to fight. And a lot of times it's something different than somebody else. But you got something to fight and you're going to have to fight it. You know, Paul makes that clear. You think about Paul and you think about the sins he had in the past. But even as an apostle, he's telling you that daily he's fighting a fight. 1 Corinthians 9 verse 27 says, "But I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway." What he is saying there is, I've got my own battle. I preach to others about their battles that they need to fight, but he says the whole time I'm preaching, I have to bring myself into subjection. I have to have self-mastery, because I can still preach to others and fall short myself. He's in his own battle. We're in our own battle. I've got my own battles. 2 Timothy 4 and 7. You know, Paul talking to Timothy there as his life's coming to a close. I have fought a good fight. And that's what he's talking about. I bring my body into subjection. I've gone through a lot, but I have fought the good fight. And he says, I finished my course and I have kept the faith. He says, I've won my fight. And now I'll go on to heaven. 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 13. You know, the ideal of being able to overcome. Yes, we have our own battles, but the Lord is with us. There has no temptation taken you but such as is common to man. There's nothing that can come upon you, nothing that you're dealing with that somebody else has not already dealt with or will deal with in the future. That ought to be a comfort to you. Somebody else has already overcome it, and somebody else will overcome it, because everybody has to deal with the same things. It says, "But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that ye are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape, that ye may be able to bear." And like I said, one of the things that he's done to help us escape is give us the ability to have self-control, to have mastery over oneself. We can do it if we want it. Philippians 4 and verse 13, "I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me." You know, again, there's the point. You know, Paul's making that point there. You know, no matter how bad it is, no matter how hard the battle is, with God, you can overcome it. If God's for you, who can be against you? And that's including yourself. You know, you got to fight yourself. But if you're fighting for the right reason, he's with you. In conclusion, temperance, self-control, it's a hard one. No doubt. It's a hard one to add, because it's not going to just happen for one. It's not just going to be fixed today. You can't just within yourself say, "Got that today, I'm temperate now." No, you can say within yourself, "I'm going to work on my temperance from now forward," and you can start fighting that battle a little harder. But it's not a one-time thing. It's a hard one to do. One, because you're fighting yourself, and that battle's never easy. That's probably the hardest battles you ever have in life, is fighting yourself. Because one, you talk yourself into doing other things. It's a lifelong fight. Like I say, it's a hard one, and it's a lifelong fight. You know, and it's different for each person. You know, and that's sometimes it's what makes it tough, because it's not the same battle we're all fighting together. We're fighting our own battles. You know, but we need to understand that we must build up the willpower to control ourselves. We can do it. We've been promised that we can. We just got to fight it and work through it on our own self. And we need to understand in the end, just like Paul says, "I have fought the good fight." It is worth it. It is worth denying self. It is worth telling self no. It is worth telling self to get over something. It's worth telling self to do better. Because in the end, we will be rewarded if we do so. This lesson hasn't been a lesson on first principles, but it's definitely been one on individual growth and doing better. And we all must do so. And we always like to offer the invitation to those that have never obeyed the gospel. If you know the exact commitment it takes, not just hearing the word, not just believing on it, but the commitment it takes to say, "I am going to change. I am going to live a whole different life from this point forward. I am going to make that commitment." If you know what it takes and you're willing to make that commitment to obey the gospel, make it this morning. Don't let time slip by on you. Or if you've obeyed the gospel and you've turned from him, take and whoop up on yourself today. Turn yourself around and say, "Lord, I'm doing better. I'm coming back." This morning, if we can help you in either case, we're glad to, if you'll come forward. As together we stand and sing.